This is the politicalbetting.com Polling Matters podcast. My name is Kieran Pedley. With a week to go until Americans go to the polls, this episode focuses on the race for the White House. Last week's announcement that the FBI were looking into some additional emails found on the shared computer of Clinton aide Huma Abedin and Anthony Weiner have left the Clinton campaign simultaneously on the back foot, but also furious with the FBI. But will this latest chapter in the Clinton email scandal mean that she falls at the final hurdle, or is this election already decided? We'll be discussing this on this podcast today. We'll also be looking at the states that we're focusing on ahead of next week's vote and what happens after November, whoever wins. Later in the show, we may find some time to also talk a little bit about the latest polling news here. We'll see how we get on. Certainly little bits and pieces happening in Westminster, not least Richmond. But I'm joined today by Leo Barassi and Rob Vance. And as I say, we've got a week to go. This is Tuesday, the 1st, until the presidential election. So that's going to be our focus today. Rob and Leo, welcome.
Good to be here.
So I guess let's start with the, for want of a better phrase, macro level polling. I suppose there's lots of, panic on some of the liberal side, maybe. Lots of people worried about what's going to happen. In terms of the actual numbers, the RCP average has Hillary Clinton plus 2.2 ahead, 2.2 points ahead. Pollster.com, which is the Huffington Post, has Clinton 6 points ahead. And it should be said that these sort of organisations that aggregate this polling will use different approaches and different weightings to do this. And to be honest, some are updated more frequently than others. And 538 from Nate Silver, which is usually the most favourable forecast for Trump, I think it's fair to say, gives Donald Trump a 26% chance of winning the presidency. So 1 in 4 and certainly edging up. Rob, I'll come to you first. I mean, there are some people that are jittery on the Clinton side. Is that wise?
Well, I think it's worth starting with what we know. So there has been some movement in the polls and therefore in the forecasts. I think whether it's got anything to do with the email scandal or not is relatively quick to be able to be dismissed, because I think a lot of the movement has actually started happening before any of that most recent story broke over the weekend or on Friday. So I think there was some kind of tightening going on anyway. It's probably not helped by this, because the way the narrative works, you end up with things are tightening and so on. But I think to a large extent you would have expected there to be some kind of tightening anyway. That's what the race has been like. If you look at whether it's Nate's model, whether it's the Betfair kind of betting odds or whatever else it is, you see an ebb and flow in a broadly upwards kind of movement for Clinton over time. And I think it was, in a sense, we were due a bit of a movement back and a bit of introspection. Looking forward, it's as likely to go back to to an extended margin, or to continue to tighten further. So, it's not like there's any historical precedent. I think there was a 2010 piece by Nate Silver when he was at the New York Times saying that, actually this whole idea of the Big Mo is kind of nonsense, that when you look at poll in the relationship between movements in the final weeks of the campaign and the actual final result, that the scatter plot looks like complete chaos rather than there being a real kind of effect of seeing this kind of movement translating into either more or less likely outcomes. So my view is, I don't think there's there is definitely some movement, but I'm not panicking. I'm happy to be on the record as saying that I don't think a Trump victory would be good for the world.
Yeah, so I think picking up Rob's point about momentum there, in a way, actually, what you're more likely to get at this stage is the kind of reverse momentum. So given that this tightening started before the latest instalment of the email stuff, it seems very much like this is kind of a regression to people's normal views, reversion to the mean. So what seems to have been going on, I think, is the sexual assault stuff about Trump brought down his numbers and brought up Clinton's. But that was only going to last so long as that carried on being quite prominent in the news. As soon as it faded, as it now has, then it was inevitable that the race was going to tighten a bit. So it's sort of like, momentum in this race is really a sign that there's going to be the reversal of momentum more than anything, because it's sort of people's views seem so locked in that what happens is a slight shift that then bounces back to, or depends.
But isn't the point, though, isn't the point that ultimately, because they're both unpopular, and we've said about that on this podcast before, you know, they both have convincing majorities of Americans unfavourable to them, that when each candidate's in the news, their numbers get worse, or the other candidates go up, right? So there's no benefit if you're Hillary Clinton to being in the news in the last week. You actually want Trump in.
Well, but that's really interesting, right? Because that's always been the case, and, you know, it's something that I've said on the show before. I mean, firstly, actually, and I think this is a point that 538 made the other day, that her favourables are now no longer completely in freakish territory. She's now about at the same point that Romney was at, so she's no longer sort of wildly out there on the fringes where he is. But look at their response to the email thing. It's interesting that obviously they know this, the Clinton camp know that the story of keep Trump in the news, keep yourself out of it, but actually they've responded with a lot of anger in a way that's clearly keeping it in the news. It seems to me that what they're going for is firing up their base with a lot of anger against what they're presenting now as a Republican attempt to stitch it up.
Which makes complete sense when you think about the election in terms of this is about both sides trying to turn out the base. I can't believe, and I've said this for a long time, I don't really believe there's a huge number of people who are genuinely still undecided, and the polling bears this out. Like, there's not that many people that are undecided about how they're going to vote next Tuesday. And they haven't been for quite a long time. This is about differential turnout and about mobilising your base. And to some extent, you know, having a slight tightening is probably no bad thing, because it guards to an extent against complacency in terms of, you know, at the moment there are all sorts of theories about who's turning out and who hasn't turned out and what early voting looks like versus 2012 and 2008. And a classic example of this has been that there's some indication that African American turnout is down on the elections which elected the first ever black president, which is not hugely surprising, let's face it. But at the same time, there's an extent to which a tightening of the race is a call to arms to make sure that people, that African Americans in Pennsylvania and North Carolina and other places, you know, other key states, actually go out and vote like they did in 2008 and ensure that Trump doesn't win. And the prospect of a Trump victory, the apparent greater likelihood of a Trump victory is probably one of the best things to motivate that, accompanied by obviously Michelle Obama doing, you know, the work that she's been doing.
I want to come back to some of those points, particularly the early voting, in a moment, but I just want to put some numbers to some of what we're saying for the benefit of listeners. So If you go to the Real Clear Politics website, you'll see the latest sort of national polls and what they're saying. And without reading every number out, there is a very clear tightening. A lot of the polls that were coming out of the field on the sort of anywhere between the 25th, so that was kind of last week, to the end of last week, did have a sort of 4 or 5 point race. Whereas a lot of the polls that are coming out of the field Sunday or Monday have, you know, a 1 or 2 point Clinton lead. There is a NBC News SurveyMonkey poll that has a 6 point lead for Clinton, but the others are pretty much either ties with Rasmussen, that we know they tend to skew Republican. The ABC Washington News poll today has a 1 point Trump lead. So actually, if you look at some of the polls in the last 4 or 5 days, they are kind of within 1 or 2 points of one another, apart from that SurveyMonkey poll. I just want to call out some analysis I've been looking at. Now, people that follow me on Twitter will know, I tweeted a lot about this yesterday, that there is this, because YouGov, I find, the most transparent with some of their data tables, to be honest. That might be me knowing the YouGov website better, but it's easier to find than some others. But if you look at a YouGov poll last week that had about a 6 or 7 point Clinton lead, there was a stark difference between Democrats backing Clinton, 91% of Democrats backed Clinton, and Republicans backing Trump, 82% of Republicans backed Trump. And it was actually, in that poll, 7% of Republicans backing Hillary, which is interesting. But I think, just to echo what you say, Rob, I mean,
but most of them called Bush.
Well, some of them, I'm sure. But when you look at this ABC Washington News poll, which has spooked me, I'll be completely transparent today, which has a 1 point Trump lead, yes, margin of error, yes, it's probably not reflective of the mean and so on. And that shows in a week it going from 80% of Republicans backing Trump to 86% of Republicans backing Trump. So this is why I'm more nervous than maybe other people are, and I might have egg on my face when Clinton wins comfortably next week. Trump does better by winning over Republicans rather than, as you say, mythical swing voters or people that are currently voting Hillary. So that feels like relatively low-hanging fruit, in the sense of, you know, he really could have won this campaign by focusing on not being a moron, and the Supreme Court and the sort of Republican issues that matter to them. Like, you might not necessarily like me, but ultimately there's a ninth justice to be selected. Let's focus on that. If Hillary Clinton's in the news for the last week and Republicans are reminded how much they don't want another Clinton White House, that surely only rallies the Republicans to Trump's cause, however much they might hold their nose, because ultimately, you know, better to hold your nose and vote Trump than allow another Clinton presidency. I mean, what do you guys think? Maybe I'm being unduly panicked, but given that Trump doesn't need to really win over waverers, it feels like we might underestimate him. Rob, what do you think?
Well, I think, I mean, there could be some truth in that. There is certainly some evidence that Republicans who previously, or like in the sort of macro level polling, the numbers of Republicans who say that they're willing to vote for Trump seems to be increasing. But there are other ways, of course, in which Republicans can register their, you know, this is not a single election, so there's a fair amount of evidence that, you know, there'll be split tickets, people voting for Republicans for the House and potentially for the Senate as well, as a means of you know, in a sense, guarding against a Clinton-dominated, you know, government, obviously with the separation of powers and so on. So I think I'm not convinced that there is enough, as it were, soft Republican support that's going to migrate from you know, from currently supporting Hillary particularly to supporting Donald. You know, I think the most likely thing is that, you know, Trump is trying to mobilise people who wouldn't be voting at all rather than who are currently in the Hillary Clinton column and moving into his column.
So then the other challenge that they've got, right, is the race is tightening now. It seemed pretty clear, but a lot of people have already voted. Yep. So now, where did I say? I can't remember if it was in this YouGov poll or another one, but it had a fifth of the sample had already voted, and of those, 55% had voted Clinton, 39% had voted Trump. I think it was a Washington Post poll. You know, okay, it's not going to completely lock it in, but it's making that challenge that bit greater. Sure, if it tightens a bit, Trump is helped, but, you know, once Clinton's already got a lot of voters in the bank, that's difficult for him.
And some of that's down to ground game. So, you know, the Democrats in lots of these swing states are very, very well organised. Leo, you'll remember when we were in North Carolina in 2008, getting people to the
good
polls.
Plug. Good plug.
Do you remember that, Rob?
Yeah.
I didn't know you guys had been to North Carolina for Obama.
Yeah, single-handedly won it for him.
Okay.
But it was really telling, because there's all sorts of reasons why you were trying to do that. One of which is obviously trying to lock things in. Obviously, you get people to vote early, then there's less risk of them not voting for you in the future.
Yeah, dying,
but also, it means that you get to prioritise resources on, as it were, the increasingly more difficult people to reach as election day approaches. You know, anybody that's early voted, it sounds really obvious, but, you know, the logic is clear. You don't have to then persuade.
You don't have to knock on their door.
You don't have to knock on their door. You don't have to send the mailers. You don't have to tailor the message to them. You're able to switch the message, often from your base to your more marginal swings and so on. And frankly, Hillary has greater scope to do that than does Donald Trump come election day, and his ground game is, everybody believes, widely inferior.
I just want to interject very briefly there. There's just another thing I've noticed. If you look at the differences between this ABC Washington News poll and the NBC SurveyMonkey one, should I add, by the way, the NBC SurveyMonkey poll is a sample of 40,000, but then, as we know from Lord Ashcroft, sample size does not necessarily equate to greater accuracy.
Size isn't everything.
Anyway, moving swiftly on. One of the main differences actually in the top line numbers, and it may or may not be relevant, is that in the Washington Post poll, sorry, this is Washington News, Clinton 45, Trump 46, Johnson 3. In the NBC SurveyMonkey, Clinton 47, Trump 41, Johnson 6. So actually, I'm not equating that difference entirely to Gary Johnson, but there is maybe some evidence there that Gary Johnson vote could go Trump. Let's move on, though. Let's move on to the states that we're looking out for. The election's a week away. We're on Tuesday, the 1st of November now. Probably important as things change. The election's next week. And although we know that the popular vote, you know, it isn't the be-all and end-all, the Electoral College is what actually decides the election. Now, of course, they are related to one another. If one side wins a popular vote convincingly, chances are they're going to win the Electoral College. But nevertheless, let's look at the states that we're looking out for. I want to get your guys' opinions on some of this. So I was looking at the Obama-Romney map, and Obama won pretty convincingly in the Electoral College, 332 to 206. And, you know, I guess the real question is then, is there a path for Donald Trump to 270? And I guess if you start by looking at sort of putting Florida and Ohio in the Trump column, now that is not necessarily a given, I completely accept that, then you end up with Clinton on 285 and Trump 253. So that still isn't enough even then, even if you assume that Florida and Ohio go Trump. Now, what happens next is, you know, interesting. But first of all, before we even go there, in terms of what other states we might be looking at, Leo, I mean, what chances do you see of Florida and Ohio going Trump?
Well, look, it's clearly possible. I mean, I think 538 at the moment has Florida pretty much as a toss-up, Ohio slightly leaning Trump, I think it's about 60-40 at the moment. So, you know, a bunch of very good analysts are looking at the numbers and saying that they think there's, on balance, a more likely than not probability that Trump's going to win the two of them. Personally, I don't think he's going to, and that is because, completely understandably, because it couldn't be factored in, the numbers that they're working with don't include Clinton's massively superior organisation, and I think that is going to make a difference of a couple of points of turning people out. So, look, I'm not saying it's definitely going to happen, but if the polls, if the top line numbers don't move between now and a week today, I would feel like those two states are probably going to just about go Clinton, and obviously that kills it for Trump. But I could be wrong here.
I think they're like the first tier, aren't they? In terms of if you're going to, a path to victory for Trump starts off with winning two big traditional swing states, Ohio and Florida, states which George Bush carried in, I think I'm right in saying, both 2000 and 2004.
Yeah, and I should add that according to The Guardian, Florida declares about midnight UK time, and Ohio half past midnight, so they're early ones to look out for as well.
But as we said, it might be necessary, but it's not sufficient. So then you need to look at the next tranche of kind of states that he would need to take. The biggest prize would be Pennsylvania, but I think Pennsylvania has moved probably towards Clinton and hasn't moved back very much. Though, I think, as we spoke about a few weeks ago, if Pennsylvania does go to Trump, then Hillary Clinton's in real trouble because all of its polling and its demographics and so on are highly correlated with other bits of the Midwest. So you're looking at Wisconsin and Michigan.
Right, so it's not just about the electoral controversy in itself. It's what
they would say. So yeah. if Pennsylvania hasn't been called at midnight and Florida and Ohio have been both called for Trump, it's going to be a long night, I think.
Pennsylvania is supposed to be 1 a.m, I think.
Yeah, okay. But often it will get called... If they've counted the votes in like the critical counties and it's a clear Clinton win, it could be sooner than that, right?
Yeah.
But then, so that's one path to victory. But on the flip side, as we talked about a couple of weeks ago, North Carolina has a very, very different demographic profile. Yeah. Was won by Romney in 2012, though was won by Obama in 2008. If that moves into the Clinton column, then she can afford to lose Pennsylvania.
And that's a classic state where the Trump putting off college-educated whites is a big deal, right?
Yep.
You know, and that's sort of how you can see them going in quite different ways, Pennsylvania and North Carolina.
Yeah, and so if Hillary Clinton, there is a map, certainly, I think it's about 280 to 258, where Pennsylvania, Ohio and Florida have all switched to the Trump column, but North Carolina has moved into the Clinton column. North Carolina, as we were talking about earlier, has early voting, so a large number of votes have already been cast, and certainly more will have been cast by next week. And then Trump really needs to win a couple of other states, so at least Iowa and Colorado, I think, are probably the places where he would need to go hunting for electoral college votes, and or New Hampshire, bits of Maine. No, I mean, I think Colorado actually has, a sort of an emerging demographic, high Hispanic population, and also a large college-educated white population. So, like, again, challenging states for him. I think more likely is that if there is a path to victory, it goes through a Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin kind of route. Possibly with,
and as Leo said, if Trump's winning Pennsylvania, then you know proportionally the chances are he could win a Wisconsin or a Michigan. So it's certainly an interesting map there. But just to recap for the listeners' benefit, I mean, I suppose If you look at Pennsylvania polling at the moment, the last five polls have Clinton leads of 4, 8, 5, 4, and 9. So reasonably comfortable. But then I suppose if there is this big national shift, then right, the states
much,
follow.
But there's not much reason to think that there is. Yeah. Right? I mean, depending how recent are those polls?
Last couple of days. With some lots of the field work done before the email scandal.
I'm not sure about the Pennsylvania ones. And I don't think you can say that the state polls... There's usually a lag. There's usually... Yeah. The state polls take longer to do, ish, depending on which one you're talking about.
But of course
they follow the national poll.
But also, of course, like, never mind the sort of the uncertainty inherent to sampling theory and all the rest of it. There is also, you know, we've now lived through in the UK the Brexit vote and also the 2015 general election. There is like the possibility of a structural problem with the polling, which I think in some ways I would have as a much more likely route to victory for Trump than the Hillary one. I
mean, but that's what 538 are counting on, right? That's why they're giving him a 25% chance when he's trailing in the polls, because they're saying, look, there's a not insignificant chance that the polls could be structurally wrong in the way that's mirrored across the states.
And wrong in the places in the Midwest where that kind of Brexit phenomenon could happen, right? The industrialised, white working class, rust
left
belt,
behind,
you know,
voted.
All those clichés, which are not necessarily 100% the reasons behind some of these phenomena, but
they're
certainly relevant.
Stylized facts, Kieran.
Let's move on, though. We're running out of time. It's easy to forget in the hubbub of an election campaign that life does go on afterwards. And let's assume for the moment that Hillary Clinton does win the presidency one way or another. It seems most people agree it's the most likely outcome, with the heavy caveat that I would always say that so was Remain, to a lesser extent so was Miliband. What happens next? Because I must admit, one of the things that concerns me slightly is that these scandals, whether you think they're right or they're wrong, justified or not, aren't going to go away because the election's happened, are they? And there are lots of other contentious issues that will immediately be on Hillary Clinton's to-do list, such as the Supreme Court. We've already had, I believe, Ted Cruz has come out and floated the idea that may not need to fill it with a ninth judge, which seems ludicrous, but that's the mentality of some of the people you're dealing with. And I believe the debt ceiling is up for debate in March as well, when you've got...
That old favourite.
And, you know, House of Representatives, which, you know, you may or may not consider Paul Ryan to be reasonable, but he certainly would lead a caucus that certainly isn't. So, difficult intray, Rob.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're all assuming that Paul Ryan will be the Speaker as of next week, but that's not necessarily a certainty either. I'm not suggesting it's likely, but there is a path to the Democrats taking control of Congress, unlikely as it might be. But that aside, you're going to have most likely, again, no certainties here, a Democratic Senate, which, of course, is like, and it's the Senate Judiciary Committee that will be doing a lot of the Supreme Court stuff. But yes, the Republicans would have a filibuster, the ability to filibuster and, you know, prevent any kind of nominee from the president. It's hard to work out what incentive they have for not doing that. But, you know, in terms of, you know, what will the American people, the people that voted for them, think of them, you know, preventing the president from being able to exercise their choice. So I think that could be a real problem.
Lame duck Congress, of course. Could Obama try and get Merrick Garland through beforehand?
But again, I don't see what incentive a Republican Senate Judiciary Committee will have in getting that through, unless there is a credible threat that they think that Merrick Garland is a better bet than any nominee that Hillary Clinton could come up with, which is, of course, a possible scenario. Merrick Garland is hardly a kind of liberal, you know, Democrat, right? So I think that, you know, that's certainly a possibility. I mean, debt ceiling is like even more nightmarish. I really find it hard to imagine how you know, a congressional majority to pass the debt ceiling is going to be cobbled together.
Leo, I mean, we talk about Hillary Clinton winning, and that's like what everyone sort of assumes. But as I kind of keep alluding to, the conventional wisdom has been wrong before. If Trump wins, I presume all bets are off. But I mean, what happens next?
Super interesting, right? Isn't it? So, I mean, there's obviously one question about where the Republicans go if Clinton wins. You know, Trump's been running against the party, so where do the next lot of people who want to be their candidate go? Do they run against the Republican establishment, or do they try and, you know, somehow change the voter base? But equally, the same thing applies to the Democrats. So, say Trump wins, then what what now do the Democratic base say? What's their interpretation of it? Is it because Clinton was just a bad candidate because she was so much part of the establishment, or, as I think is almost certainly going to happen, there'll be a lot of Sanders supporters and people who are generally inclined that way to say, well, that's what happens when you put up a mainstream moderate. What we need is a radical leftist who's going to tap into popular anger. You know, it's sort of
turn out the youth vote.
Yeah. You know, get people who don't vote to vote, all that kind of stuff. You know, it's sort of.
Have we got any examples of where this might happen in a first world Western country? No, I mean, but what about Trump, though? I mean, yeah, ultimately, he, as you alluded to, he's had his divisions with his own side as well. So that's an interesting dynamic there. I mean, presumably, if Trump's winning, then the Senate's going red as well, is it, Rob, do you think?
No, I don't think necessarily. I think, yes, lots of the Senate seats are in swing seats. But, for instance, at the moment, the probability is that Evan Bay will take back the Senate seat in Indiana, but it will almost certainly vote for Trump Penn. So I think there's some evidence that suggests that there isn't that much of a correlation between the Senate and the presidential races. But I think an interesting scenario would be a Paul Ryan speakership and a Trump presidency. I mean, who really is going to be driving the domestic agenda in that case? Far from clear that there aren't that many congressmen and women on the Republican side who are that supportive of Trump, a hell of a lot of them.
Right, and
if one would have been, you know, opposed.
You've got to see there'll be a lot of Republicans who would, if Trump won, think that there's a very good chance he won't be their candidate in 4 years. You know, I think it seems pretty much certain that whoever is the next president is going to be monumentally unpopular. If that's Trump, then, you know, if you're Paul Ryan, you're thinking, I can be the president in 4 years.
Those are good odds. I need to tap up Shadzi on this. Those are good odds. The next president of the United States will be primaried by their own side.
Yeah.
Discuss.
Yeah, I mean,
that sounds quite likely.
Or even just force, or even, you know, I mean, okay.
They always get primaried, right?
So what's the question? I mean, who is the next president's party's candidate in 4 years' time? Is the interesting question. Mm.
Yeah.
Well, lots to...
Oh, loses the primary. Yeah.
Lots to think about. I mean, but we're going to probably do another podcast before the day, because a lot can happen in a week, because I think it's been very clear from day one in this campaign. But as we sit here now, popular vote-wise, do you guys have an instinct on where it ends up?
Popular vote?
So not specifics, but like, so the spread, so Clinton plus X, presumably.
Yeah, I mean, I think it will settle down to something like Clinton plus 4. I think most of the evidence suggests... So my take on it will be that Clinton will do better.
That's a lot of votes for Trump.
Sorry? It's a lot of votes for Trump. But I think that Hillary Clinton will do less well in the electoral college in Obama, but will do better in the popular vote.
Yeah. Boringly, I've got a sort of similar position to Rob in terms of the spread. I think that she will be something like 3 to 5 up. I think it'll be reasonably comfortable, but Trump will do well enough that it'll be very difficult to dismiss this as his brand of politics has been absolutely destroyed.
I don't want to say 4 to 5 as well, because that would be really, really boring. I think the whole thing, I mean, I guess my conclusion is the whole thing's built on sand anyway. We see how volatile this is. And I do think it is volatile in the last... Some of those poll numbers we talked about earlier, the fluctuation of Gary Johnson's numbers can make a big difference. The importance of the base, particularly on the Republican side, is really important. I wouldn't be surprised if we end up with something a la 2000. I'm not necessarily going to call it as a...
Nate Silver puts that at 10%, I think, at the moment.
So
that's an electoral college victory for Trump and a popular vote victory for Hillary Clinton, is that right?
I think that's the right. That's the way around. I mean, I think
that way around is more likely.
That way around is more likely. I think Trump has the better potential in the electoral college. I'm not going to call that, but I think we're looking at something that could end up a lot closer than people realise. And I mean, Trump's going to do something pretty damn special to pull it off. And I guess maybe his ground game will ultimately be the reason why he doesn't. But lots to come in the next week. That's all we've got time for this week. We didn't get to Richmond, but I'm sure we'll touch on that again. Thanks again to Leo Barassi and Rob Vance, as ever, for their excellent insights. And stay tuned for another podcast before and after the big day next week.